like to that, you know, that I need a little bit of yogurt to make the whole thing. Basically, it's by proper performance of your duties. You know, when, in other words, when karma is performed properly, then the natural next step is jnana. Right? So when karma yoga is performed properly, then naturally So karma yoga would mean that you're engaging your activities all in Krishna's service. Right? So, and in that, of course, then there has to be the cultivation somewhat of that you understand what you're doing and why you're doing it. So it's not just sentiment. So that process then will make you aware of what's going on, because you're performing an activity of knowledge. With time, you'll be able to actually observe the activity, understand, you know, properly its connection to Krishna, understand why these activities are being performed and why we prefer these activities. Does that make sense? Because in the beginning, we perform activities, we just enjoy the activity. But with time, we're able to actually observe it. You know what I'm saying? It's just a matter of practice. You know, in the beginning, something new, then the thing itself is all that you're worrying about. But after a while, then, you know, you'll be looking at other things. You know what I'm saying? Once you get accustomed to it, once you get used to it, once you get habituated. So the idea is that the karma yoga, then the activities are engaged in the Lord's service with the proper understanding, with time, then one will start to be able to see more the philosophy in the activity. So jnana yoga doesn't mean that the activities are any less. It just means that the ability to observe, you know, action in this world and to contemplate it becomes more prominent. One is able to see the modes of nature working. One is able to, contemplate, you know, what is proper action, what is improper action. You know, like this. Does that make sense? You know, so all those aspects that are mentioned in the later chapters of Gita, and those become the prominent view, perspective. Karma yoga, the focus is more on the activity itself, like that. Jnana yoga will be, that focus is there, but one can also appreciate the subtleties that are working, right? Because all gross activity comes from subtle. Does that make sense? So that would be there. So there's, it's naturally in the process of devotional service, the purification will bring about more intellectual activity. Right? Because the senses are connected to the intelligence. And so when they're engaged appropriately in service, they become purified, the intelligence is purified, one is able to then observe. Does that make sense? Rather than looking at it simply for, I'm doing this to get the result, then we start looking at it, well, the results for Krishna, and so how to make it work the best. And so therefore, then you're starting to understand, well, if I'm working without desire for results, therefore the quality of my, or the standard of my, let's say, personal qualities then comes into question, right, or comes into play. Because before it's a matter of the efficiency of the activity being performed and getting the observable result. Then with time, that result then will be given to Krishna. But with time, then the result's already Krishna, you're working for Krishna. Therefore, to work on that platform means that the qualities that you're working with will become more of a focus. Does that sound like that? No, because the intellect is not there for just playing with philosophy. It's there to assure that we are situating ourselves properly in the devotional process. Does that make sense? You know, in other words, the intelligence can observe things, so we want to observe what is our standing in devotional service, what's the quality of our motive, or the quality of our endeavor, or what what emotions or what feelings are enhancing or getting in the way of that proper performance of service. Does that make sense? So in other words, if it's understood that it's a good thing, then with time it will come. But otherwise, one can always, as a practice, try to read regularly,
few days ago you were mentioning the importance of brahmachari training.
Brahmachari training.
What would you recommend when there's no formal brahmachari training in the situation?
If there's no formal brahmachari training, basically is understand the principles that brahmachari is based on, and you just have to practice them yourself. The idea is formal means that someone is seeing that you're developing, but otherwise, if one knows what one's trying to gain, then one can practice it oneself. Because the idea is that the brahmachari training is the basic training or the fundamental training for all situations in life, throughout one's life, even if one's a brahmachari or not. Right? Because that means the humble service attitude, that's always required. Because laziness is not an ornament. You know what I'm saying? Action, through action is how you accomplish things. Right? You perform an activity, then there's a result. Of course, that result we're trying to do for Krishna, but in any case, result for Krishna is only gained through work. Does that make sense? So the endeavor must always be there. But at the same time, it senses Krishna's result, therefore it's up to him how he wants it to work. So, therefore, that humility, gaining of knowledge, you need knowledge to understand. In other words, if you want to perform an activity properly, you have to have knowledge. If you want to perform an activity properly, then there should be the proper work ethic or proper, feeling to do that. You want to improve the quality of your endeavor, then there must be cleanliness, right? Because mode of goodness is purity. So therefore, then your surroundings, your environment, yourself, or whatever it is that you have influence on, then you should try to see that it's kept clean, orderly, tidy, like that. Respect, it's because we're trying to know Krishna, we're trying to learn about Krishna, we're getting this from authority, so without respect, how are we going to respect authority, how are we going to gain that knowledge, right? Because our activity is performed, with knowledge from authority, so there must be respect, right? There must be sense control, otherwise how we'll follow the instruction of authority, how we will ensure that the quality of our work is complete or to a good quality, right? Because the senses are controlled halfway through the work, you decide to go off and do something else, or because of distraction of what you want for yourself, then you can't actually work properly for who it is you're supposed to work for. Okay, so the quality of work then will not be so good. So that's the sense control. So basically these aspects of knowledge, that respect, proper performance of duties, cleanliness, knowledge, sense control, work ethic, these are the fundamental principles. You follow that, then it works. So if someone's formally training you or not, these things you can pursue yourself. Does that make sense? Because the idea is even if one's not a brahmachari, he's still pursuing these himself. The grihastha is still pursuing these, the vanaprastha is. Does that make sense? Because they're the basis of action. Does that make sense? If you want to get somewhere, you want to go back to Godhead, then you're going, right? So, does that make sense? So then that means there must be some action to go somewhere. So without properly applied action, how will you get anywhere? I want to get on the bus, and I, go to a place where they pick up the trash. You're not going to get any buses. You know what I'm saying? What a free ride down in the garbage tip, the right maybe. You know what I'm saying? In other words, the proper form of action gets you the result. Does that make sense? That is why austerity, the duties are there, because those are the duties that will get you your results. Grihastha has a different set of duties because they're getting a different result. Right? But the point is the principle of performing your activities to get whatever your result is for Krishna is the same. So that means you have to have knowledge, you have to have respect for authority, you have cleanliness, you know, sort of properly perform the activity. Does that make sense? You know, your knowledge, sense control, so that it's all required. Does that make sense?
Where does laziness come from? And how
where does it come from? I want to know if it was out of that last box of Cracker Jacks that you ate. Or maybe it was the 7-Up.
How do you get rid of laziness?
Basically is that in the sense still the same thing as this knowledge, is that you have the understanding that it's not very important. It means you think about it. You could get something done, but you don't do it. So is that valuable? No. So therefore, if you're lazy in your study, you're lazy in your other endeavors, even taking care of yourself, you know, you don't wash your clothes, then do you have clean clothes? No. So, in other words, anything that you require or need needs action. Is that sentence? So that action then needs to be performed to get a result. You have so many results you want. The only way to get them is through action. Does that make sense? So in other words, it's a matter of more contemplation. You have basically two methods to do this. The preferred method, or the simplest method, is you yourself generate the inspiration to not be lazy, right? Or be in a, or take up that good association which you've been inspired. Because in other words, action is going to come after you have a need, right? You contemplate something, then you see, you know, it's a good thing, it's important, I'd like to be involved. By further contemplation, one, the mind then accepts that, right? So once the mind accepted that, yes, this is what I want, then only will be action. So if there's no action, means you don't really want it. So if you don't want it, means you don't actually have an interest in it or see the importance of it. Right? So the pile of clothes sits there because you don't really have a need to wash them. Because you haven't really connected that you washing them means you'll have clean clothes, you not washing them means you don't have clean clothes, because you work on the principle is that I don't wash them, then my mom out of her affection washes them, or out of her frustration, but if she doesn't wash them, then what does she do for me in her life? So that's the meaning of her life, so she's going to wash them anyway, so I just have to sit here and occasionally look cute enough that she doesn't kill me. Right? Like that. But the problem is that you're in Sydney. And even though Spain starts with S, it's not the same place. Therefore, unless you've got lots of money that you can mail them to her and have them laundered over there and then have her ship them back, then you've got to wash them yourself. But even then, you still have to make the endeavor to send them, unless you've got even more money than you hire a servant, they'll arrange it for you. But it's not prestigious to have them laundered in Spain. Generally, it's more prestigious that, you know, you tell people they're laundered in Paris. So, but I don't think it would cost you much more in Standish, you know, from Spain or Paris. Probably there's more flights to Paris, so it might be cheaper. You know, plus more prestige, so. But still, your mom misses out, so then you'd have to consider the relationship aspect, you know. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So the point is if you see the importance, then you'll do the work. Right? That's why there's brahmachari training, because the brahmachari is on his own. He doesn't do it, it doesn't get done. Well, if he stays in his house, he's under the illusion that it will happen. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So, therefore, if you take the initiative, then you can learn it yourself, and your life will go nicely, then you have it. If you don't, then Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions a second alternative, which is, you know, how you say, is there recommended? honest, but it's a little bit more rough like that. It's certainly the process most take, that is, get yourself involved with women. You know what I'm saying? In other words, get married. Because then your wife is not going to tolerate you being a slob and being lazy. Right? And they have emotional methods that you never even dreamed of. You know, if you thought your mom could occasionally have a bad hair day, and that was too much, try every day to be a bad hair day. Like that. And then increase the intensity probably by about 10. Right? Very motivating, you know, for those who can get to the mode of passion. Right? In other words, you replace the mode of ignorance by the mode of passion. And then, if you still work on that little bit of knowledge and all that, and properly perform your duties, that will then gradually bring you to the platform of goodness. Right? And then, in that platform, then it won't be so rough anymore, and then it'll be a little bit more pleasant. You know what I'm saying? Because it's properly situated. You're properly performing your duties in the right attitude and everything. But what it'll bring you to is simply the same platform that was that you could have gained as a brahmachari. You know, with a lot less trouble. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Temple commanders can be a little annoying, but it means they don't have the the emotional ammunition that women have. They just don't. They can yell, they can scream, they can be rough, they can use some bad language. You know, but that's kind of like the limit of it, you know. So you have these two paths before you. You contemplate well and make your choice.
When
a jiva leaves the body. Okay.
At what stage that you take another body?
At what stage do you take another body?
And the other thing is that at the time when we are there and somebody is leaving the body and we are running down chanting, at what stage should we stop officially? Normally, does the jiva rope around the body and then finally go back? What's the process of?
You just do kirtan for, you know, until the mood dies down, and then you go about the next duties, which is the antyeshti, you know, the death rites. I mean, there's always a something, right? There's always it doesn't just sort of go, you know, just like this, right? You know, even if we have kirtan, you know, so it, you know, the RG ends, and then the kirtan goes a little bit, and then it stops. You want to get seconds or something like that? 37 seconds, you should go on.
Oh, well, no. There's somebody who says that the Jew, they just see this aroma around 12 seconds or something.
12 seconds. Something okay, like so at least 12 seconds.
What state does the Jew take with body? Is it physical body or material body or spiritual body? Or what sort of
physical body or material body?
Whatever. What? Does it take
instantly
or?
Instantly.
Or does it take time?
Basically speaking, means the normal element is that there's a gap, right? Because life's tough, right? And then you die, right? So then they get, generally it's a 9-month break. They get a bit of a snooze, right? And then after that, everything's calmed down, the nerve endings are a little less frazzled. Then they're placed in their new situation. That's your general form, like that. Devotees, you know, whether they need to go through that or not, so that's Krishna's arrangement. But the principle is means, one's not used to the diet that pigs have, right? Because, you know, as a human being, it's not exactly what you call, you know, hot cuisine, right? You know, so then they feed you, because pigs eat stool, so that's what the training is. So they'll bring you a really disgusting stool and force you to eat that. So that would go on for some time. Then at one point they'll bring you a stool that's not as disgusting. And then when you go, this is a little bit better, then you're ready. Then you get put in the pig's fire. Yes, no?
And killing pig is pretty good, why doesn't have to be instant at the same time?
Exactly, yeah. No. Because it's just a transfer of the consciousness. But in the material world, basically you have the judgment, you have the hellish kind of situations that there's any to go through, then you have the bodies, various animal bodies that have to go through, and then, you know, eventually you come back to the same position you were in when you, you know, made, you know, whatever mistakes you're making in the first place. Adjustment, right? If you're pious, then you know the judgment will be there, and then you'll be sent to whichever pious regions you're supposed to go to, like that. So generally, pious, they just stay there at Pitriloka with the Amaraj, but the Amaraj is nice for them, you know, like that.
So how does it benefit the Jivatma waiting for a period of things that are not for the religious standards and the devotional service coming in or not? So how does that benefit that if someone already determined to get into the body?
The point is, it means you're talking about someone who's not a devotee.
No, even a family member.
I'm talking about that a devotee or not a devotee. Family members can be devotees or not devotees. It's like Kalani Kashi, who was a family member of Prahlad Maharaj, but there was a bit of a difference. Or Duryodhana and Yudhishthira, they're family members. You know what I'm saying? So
even if it's a devotee who hasn't achieved.
Okay, so if it's a devotee, then it's a different system. You don't deal with Yamaraj. Devotees don't go see Yamaraj. That is just arranged by under Krishna's direction. Through energy, if they haven't completed, means Krishna mentions from the Gita that if they're basically not very advanced or very focused in the spiritual life, then what is distracting them, you know, what kind of material facility or position of enjoyment that is there, they'll go to the heavenly planet and to experience that. Having finished their time in the heavenly planets, they'll come back to the earth and take birth in religious or pious or like Brahminical families, like this kind of thing. If someone was more focused in devotional life, they were, you know, situated nicely, focused, determined, then, but they didn't complete also, then they'll take birth in the family of devotees. They don't bother. Are successful, then they'll go to Gokul where Krishna's performing the pastimes, and then perfect their love for Krishna, and then from there, then go to Gokul. Some other questions? Yes.
Throughout this life, we form various attachments to friends and family members. Even though, like, they're all devotees, while leaving the body, if that attachment is still there, then what's the destination?
What's the destination if on leaving the body the attachment is for someone of this, from here?
Someone who's a devotee.
Depends. But what do you mean by devotee? You mean sadhu leaving the ashram, you know, is not, he shouldn't be determining what flowers will be planted. He's gone. He's gone. You understand? So the point is you can do nothing anyway. So therefore, when you leave, you think of Krishna and only Krishna. Then you go to Krishna. Otherwise, it's Krishna and your family. So what does Krishna and your family mean? It means here. Here is your family, and you think of Krishna. But if you think of just Krishna, then you go to where Krishna is. Do you understand? It's practical. I put $10 in the bank. How many dollars do I have in the bank? See, in other words, there's no sentiment here. And that's the problem. Because we're thinking, if I think of my mother at the time of death, that is a great and noble thing. So I should get something better than becoming a lady who's then going to have a big family with all kinds of sons that will remember her at the time of death. You know what I'm saying? This is where Hinduism falls a little short. Great sentiment, but reality is another thing. That's why there's philosophy. You find the balance between the philosophy, between the culture and reality. You know what I'm saying? So it's noble to be absorbed in family members, but the point is are they actually your family? Right? The soul, that lady didn't give birth to the soul, she gave birth to your body. Saying, so your connection is on the bodily platform. So at the time of death, what we're dealing with is the soul and body is left, but the soul remains. So then what should be the consideration? The body or the soul? Right? The soul. So therefore, the soul is the eternal servant of God. So we think of God, we go to God. If it is concerned with the body that's been left, it means that's valuable. So then we'll get another one. Does that make sense? That's how it works. So what loophole are you trying to find?
a relationship with spiritual master, right?
Okay, that is a different thing. You said friends and family and all that. You think of the spiritual master at the time of death, you go back to God.
So in those times, like, if we have friends or family who are advanced devotees.
Advanced? But what do you mean by advanced? But why are you remembering? Because they're advanced, or you're remembering because this is my friend or my uncle or my mom or my wife? You know, or my girlfriend, or someone. You know what I'm saying? What's the reason that you are thinking of them? You know what I'm saying? You're a man, you have to distinguish.
So, it's best to be in mode of detachment.
Not a bad idea. Bhagavatam definitely recommends it. There are chapters that discuss this and go through the whole thing like that. You might do well to go through that. They go through the whole scenario. What is the person who's dying, what he's thinking? What are all the people in the room, what are they thinking? You might find that a bit amusing. Or at least enlightening. You understand? And then you can make your judgment on who you're going to think about. But the point is, the simplest is just remember Krishna. Right?
Of course, that's
not a bad option.
Of course, that's from now onwards, we have to act that in that way.
Basically, if you practice it from now onwards, there's a better chance. Right? Isn't it? It's just like, if I start a business now, you know, when I'm young. Then when I'm 50 years old or 60 years old, what's the chance that my business will be successful? I've been running it for 30, read the business proposal? No. So then, why would you do it as a spiritual proposal? Both are founded in action. So, you want to be successful at the time of death, then you start now. Just like you say, I want to retire at 65, so I want to have all, you know, all my mortgages paid, everything I own, I have money in the bank, my children are all married and all situated, you know, we living the, you know, lifestyle we want, the social status we want. When do I start working for that? 64? 60? 59? 58 and a half? Or when we're 18 years old. So why would spiritual life be any different? It's more important, so why would it get first preference? Does that make sense? So in other words, stick to thinking of the Krishna and the spiritual master much better. I mean, if Bhaktivinoda Thakur happens to be your uncle or something like that, then hey, go for it. Remember him. But if it's not, then I speak to more of Krishna and the spirit of that. You know, the Lord's associates like that. More, it's more clear, more guaranteed. Living entities dealing with may or may not understand that. Or if they're devotees and you're just dealing with devotees, that's not a problem. If they're looking at it that, you know, I'm your brother, sister, mother, father, then they're thinking that, you know, that's the basis. But it's not. It's the how you say, the medium that you're working through. You know what I'm saying? So that becomes understood. That's why there's duties. Then you properly perform the actions that would be, how you say, expected in that relationship. Right? Because you're dealing with rasa. Krishna is that. He is rasa. So how the son deals with the mother, that's established by Krishna. So therefore, there's etiquette, there's rules. That makes sense.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Yeah.
Maharaj, I just, I don't want to be the right forum, but it was the, when someone's, I was just speaking to someone yesterday on the phone, and they were a little disgruntled with their relationships in ISKCON.
Disgruntled.
Yeah.
The question would happen. Were they ever gruntled?
Yeah, to some degree they
have been gruntled in the past.
They've been gruntled.
Okay. And now they are disgruntled.
So I was kind of encouraged.
It's actually a word, gruntled.
So I was trying to encourage them to not become overwhelmed by
disgruntled. Basically, as mentioned by Haridas Thakur, when in dealing with the holy name, is that if you can, you know, best is those persons that you have a difficulty with, you know, who, you know, you can work it out with them, great. Because it's very quick, it's immediate. If you can't, then simply by chanting the holy name, you know, without offense, you know, then with time, then all these things will go down like that. You know, and so then when it comes to the point where you can deal with it, then, you know, that's what you would naturally take. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, if they're comfortable to deal with it now, great. If they're not, then give it time to chant. Like that. And then what association, if they do appreciate be involved in that. In other words, they should be very careful not to avoid association or to give up association. They just may be more specific or particular with their association. Does that sound?
Yeah. The person
is not chanting. Can they do? Okay, it could just take a little longer then. In other words, they just have to work on the time element itself, or time then, you know, kind of. The tendency of the soul is because they are such an ananda, is they can only really relate to happiness. So unhappiness they tend to forget. You know, it's like, you know, many times you see older people referring back to when they were kids and it was a rough time and stuff like that. But they'll look at the, you know, kind of the fun side of the upside, and they'll even laugh at the misfortune if it's long enough time. But, you know, sometimes you'll be 30, 40 years here. So you can try that also, but it's more dangerous because life, you don't know when it will end. So you wouldn't want to get caught in that where you're inimical to devotees, but in the association of devotees. You know what I'm saying? Because there are births like that. You know? So find fault and then, you know, put blame and then criticism. No, it's a matter of figure out what's actually going on and then work with that. But otherwise, if that works nice, it's not kind. And then with time, you know, things are just, I've heard others mention it, that sometimes, you know, they'll spend years in that mode of behavior, and then slowly it gets lessened, and then they're able to make contact and interact, and then slowly. But those are the ones that you see make that endeavor. You know, there's others that don't make the endeavor. We haven't seen them for, you know, early in the 80s, late 70s. You know what I'm saying? So it's not a guarantee. So you just have to be, you have to, in other words, don't be completely overwhelmed by it. You need to keep some finger on the pulse where you're using your intelligence and applying the philosophy. Even if it's difficult, just you know that ultimately that's where you're going to get to, even though at this point I can't do it. But if that is there, you will move in that direction. But if you don't, then it's a problem. Material world is like that. It's just the way it functions. In a sense, so it's not.
Is it like a karma to go through that?
Is it karma to go through it? That element may be involved, but the point is whatever the situation, it's more what you do with it. You know what I'm saying? Yudhishthira is not getting upset about Duryodhana, he's not getting upset that he lost an empire, he's not getting upset that he's lost the paternal kingdom, that actually of all the those born of the wives of the Chitsubirya, that he's the only one entitled to the throne. None of these thoughts are bothering him. So therefore, he goes out to the forest and Krishna comes out to visit and, you know, sages come and visit and he has a great time while he's out there. You know what I'm saying? Like that, there's no loss for him as far as his consciousness goes. Because he's not blaming anyone, right? Dharma is not in a grumpy mood when Prickett Myers comes and asks, you know, who has done this to you? Right? Because he says that would be a hard one to actually say, because you could say this person's done it, but why would he be doing it unless there's something connected back to my desire or my need or my interest? You know what I'm saying? It's just like this. Let us say you have someone who has issues in a relationship. Let us say they come in contact with someone who actually deals nicely in relationships. It may actually take them years to acknowledge that this is real. Because they've had bad experience, and even though they say they want a real relationship, in one sense they don't believe that they can happen. So even if they are happening, they won't either observe it or acknowledge it. So it takes a long time because the element of surrender is there. And the living entity, generally that's not a popular point. Surrender. Because one, surrender means you're not the controller, so that makes you vulnerable. So if you're the controller, you'll be happy that way. Or if you surrender, someone will take care of you, you'll be happy that way. So if things don't go how you like on the material platform, you may feel that there's been a loss. I surrendered and then others have gotten in control and things didn't go so nice for me. If I had been in control, I would have had a better situation. Or the relationships would have gone nicer, this and that. So this element of relinquishing control, that's more of a difficulty. So that's why it's based on the principle of duties. So it's austerity. It's that these are the duties you perform. So it's you're accepting to follow the Lord's plan of following the duties. So it's not like a blind or mindless surrender. It means you know what you're doing and what are the results. So if something goes wrong, then you make the adjustments. In the Vedic situation, everybody is still in control of their life, but they're using that control in surrender to God. It's not like the Western where you just completely, you know, don't even consider what's going on. You're not observant. You're not in touch with the reality of things. It's a matter of you're dealing with the reality, so therefore you can see, if you're dealing with the reality, you can tell what is good and what's not good. If you're dealing with the sentimental surrender, then it's either all good until it's so obvious that it's not, and then it's all bad. You know, so that makes, you know, it may be very nice and pleasant in the beginning, but the problem is in the end it may not be so good. Right? So that's why the process is using of the intelligence. Then you know exactly where you stand. It's not a matter of duality. It's a matter of you're dealing with the absolute truth. So therefore, if absolute truth has mediums through which that comes, you know, through instruction, through, you know, the holy name, through the scriptures, through the service. And so that's always there. Other relationships then, due to our conditioned nature, are tinged with the conditioned element. So they're going to still function according to material laws. So if you deal with them in duties, then, you know, whether it's going one way or the other way, you still have what you're supposed to do. If you don't, then you may get the element that, well, here you might even be dealing with, they're dealing with the duties, but they're not using with intelligence, not endeavoring with intelligence. So then they're unable to discern, you know, in other words, the good from the bad. You know, it's just like, let's say I go in and I have a basket of tomatoes, and they've been sitting there a couple of days, right? An intelligent cook can go in there and pick out the, you know, 5 or 6 or 10 bad tomatoes, and then the whole rest of the basket is good. Right? Someone who doesn't know bumps into one rotten tomato, goes one or two more, hits another one, and goes, yeah, this basket is rotten, and throws the whole thing out. Right? Because they're unable to discern. So, therefore, it's like this. There have been, it's not an uncommon theme within the material sphere that there are persons working for your welfare who fall prey to the same difficulties you have. Let's say you have an area where people have cholera. So doctors and others who want to help go there. Sometimes they fall prey to cholera. So you can't say, oh, this guy never helped anybody, he couldn't help anybody, see, he died from cholera also. You know what I'm saying? That would be unfair. So if someone is able to help you, you became situated in Krishna consciousness, you move forward, you advance, you tasted Krishna consciousness, you've gotten that benefit. Because the process is individual, it is voluntary. If the individual somehow or another, due to their own conditioning in that, is not able to function anymore in that capacity, then it doesn't outweigh the devotional benefit, because that's eternal. Material things are always temporary. You know what I'm saying? So the guy that made you a devotee and preached to you, if he goes away, doesn't mean that now you can't continue. You know what I'm saying? The temple president changes, the head pujari changes, your best friends, you know, give up or move to other temples and leave you alone, or it's just material energy. You know, that's why we're dealing with simultaneously the conditioned and the spiritual, but the prominence is the spiritual. But it's understood is you have to take care of the conditional, because we put a lot of faith in. Not that the conditional is specifically important, but because it's important to us, therefore we use it as a medium. Right? If it's not important, then we just use direct activities as a medium. So the mundane we're dealing with is some flowers or some incense or some water for the arctic or washing a pot or, you know, the potatoes in the kitchen. It's not when they come in the door, they're like chintamani, right? You know, we just bought them down the poles or something, you know, so it's not like, you know, saying they don't have, you know, this, you know, this different section, you know, potatoes from Queensland, potatoes from Golokandala, potatoes from, you know, this, you know, it's not like that. You know, so that, you know, when the marketer goes out, you tell them, make sure you get the spiritual potatoes now. I tell you, yeah. The other ones that have the little glow, right? You know? You know what I'm saying? So, in other words, you're dealing with a more incidental mundane, because the environment of that is so much involved in the direct. Still, everything that you're dealing with is still within the mundane, but you don't perceive it that way, right? And when you're dealing more within the indirect, then it's more obvious you're dealing in the mundane, but still, the ability to connect it to Krishna is still there. Right? That's still part of the process. So the conditional must always be factored in. You know, especially at times like this, when one is disturbed by something like that, it's just, that's the way it works. You know what I'm saying? You know, you can get upset, you know. The daughter can get upset that, well, you know, when she was 12, her father died. It's a very common thing that the daughter blames the father for dying. Why did he do that? Why did he leave him? You know, it's not that he had a choice. You know, he didn't think, well, if I get the timing right now, if I step out in the street, this Mack truck is definitely going to cream me. You know? No, he just is, you know, distracted, thinking of something else, possibly even the daughter. You know, it was her birthday, late, you know, hurries up, he's not as careful. You know what I'm saying? So, what benefit to the daughter is she getting by blaming the father for dying? It's out of his hands. You're dealing with the modes. You know, so the best thing is that he's done so much for us, what he's done in that, and that appreciation, that you move on with that. You base your life on that rather than, my father left me, therefore every other authority is going to leave me. Right? And then not trust anyone. No, I had a good life. You know, maybe it was only 12 years. That was unfortunate. It didn't continue, but unfortunately I had 12 years. Others, some don't even get that. You know what I'm saying? So then you realistically look at it. You just change how you look at it. It changes your whole life.
Yeah, it's good. The application of that is sometimes difficult if the person's very angry.
If they're angry, just let it sit.
Yeah.
Don't poke it. You know, in other words, be pleasant, nice to them. You know, in other words, what things that makes it that they're comfortable with, they relax with, deal in that area, because then at least they feel that they have, you know, some friends, some connection, to devotional service and the devotees. And then with time, it'll come up naturally. In other words, if they're angry, just deal with that. They're don't get too preachy and don't get too, just be supportive. Because in other words, it's emotional. You're dealing with the mind. So you deal with the mind, and the main thing is be supportive. And then from that supportive, slowly, slowly, they'll calm down. They themselves will be preaching to you later, you know, about their position. If they get the support. If they get support, they'll calm down quicker. If they don't get support, they remain angry longer, because the frustration is in the relationship. So if they get the relationship that works, then the anger dies down quicker. Is that okay? Fine. You have something? Is it connected with this?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay. We'll
finish. But with the example you give, for example, the daughter, his father died.
Or the son.
Of the son. The offspring. And the parents leave or die.
What if it's the Pekingese dog?
You mentioned that, like, for example, the person may be like never trusting authorities. You know, mm-hmm. And when that is like an ingrained kind of
condition. It can be. They can allow it to become. Uh-huh. It's not unnatural for it to become. But they don't have to.
So if someone does have that condition because of what they've gone through, and it interferes with their Krishna consciousness or with their relationships with the bodies, how can they change it? Or is it just their karma for this lifetime and have to wait?
No, you never have to wait. I mean, the point is through intelligence you can adjust anything.
Uh-huh.
Because through intelligence then you can have practice. Right? That's why the sadhana is that. Not necessarily that you're in ecstasy about it, but you've accepted the principle that there's a benefit. So you follow it because it's the rule, and it will give the result in time. So by practice, then you come to understand it, come to appreciate it, come to like it. So it becomes part of your lifestyle. Right? So through intelligence, you contemplate, and there we went from, you know, how can you leave me, you know, we're so dependent and everything, to the point of, well, it's not his plan to leave, and so you look at what was gained. In other words, you look at what was from, you know, when you were born up to, or before you were born up to when you're 12, rather than, you know, from now you're 12 on the rest of your life. You know what I'm saying? It's just a matter of what you want to look at. So in other words, you look at what benefit is there, what is the relationship, what's the intended relationship.
What is the that impression or that conditioning becomes subconscious, and so
you go in and chase it. I mean, you use intelligence, you use it as quad. Why can get you a long way? It's just a matter of whether you want to go there or not. Why be upset that you had a bad relationship with your father? That was your father, one God. It doesn't mean the principle of authority, you know, is left by that. There's plenty of people that had good relationships with their father, good relationships with the other authority. It works nice. It works great for other people. They're happy about it. So why do you have to allow that your experience, you know, why is it your experience is the all in all, you know, the ultimate, only because it's mine, so it's through the false ego that I would think like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I mean, you can go in and chase it down.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. So it's just a
motion. It's just a matter of how short the legs are, you know, how far you can get it.
Exactly.